In our last episode, I said we were going to talk about a couple of different topics, and I came up with a list. I'm going to run through them with you very quickly, not all of them, but future topics would include solar flares. We would talk about U.S. manufacturing and U.S. design. We would talk a little bit about what happened to Kodak and GE and the other companies that were, you know, everybody used to know here in the country. I said we would talk a little bit about cultural trends, social media, gaming, data centers, AI, how overnight success, and of course I use Colonel Sanders as an overnight success. We'll talk about the history of the internet. These are things we are going to cover going forward. And we'll talk about the history of Russia and Ukraine and how, you know, just all the different things that are going on. We'll talk about alternative uses of graphic cards and the internet of gaming and how that's kind of gone through. And then we'll talk about the fraud involving electric vehicles, et cetera. So these are things that we're going to talk about. Today we're going to talk about solar flares. And I'm going to talk with Paul. I'm Paul the elder. He's Paul the younger. And we're going to talk about EMPs. And we're going to talk about this from a perspective of national defense, as well as from manufacturing, personal computing, and potentially how Karen and Ken will have their hair go on fire if they lose internet connection with their cell phones. How are you doing today?
Good. Good. Yeah, so solar flares are a thing. Usually the Earth has, to put it simply, like the Earth has a magnetosphere. And the damaging part of a solar flare is the extra energy. Energy has to go somewhere. And the sun spits out a solar flare. And if it is directed at Earth, if we're, you know, that's the thing, is the sun spits out solar flares all the time. There's all these classifications for the classes of solar flares. The ones, I think the biggest one is, it's called a CME, coronal mass ejection.
Yeah, and just so you know, if you go on the internet and you look up solar flares and CMEs, they use the terms interchangeably in some articles. Even NASA uses the term interchangeably, but there's a whole host of classifications, and you're going to get into this, I know, in greater detail, but people are actually beginning to pay more attention to these.
Yes. What is it? A few weeks ago, there was some type of cell tower outage in the Northeast that they blamed on a solar flare of some kind. It happened like early in the morning, right before sunrise or right at sunrise, which would make sense because you can't get hit by a CME if it's dark, typically, because you have to be facing the sun. So that's the thing, is it's a directional problem. The sun is spitting out solar flares all the time, and because of the vastness of space and the distance we are from it, we usually miss them. They're not a big deal most of the time. And it wasn't until fairly recently that we had dedicated satellites that orbit the sun now. I think it's within the past 25 to 30 years. It's a fairly new phenomenon, you know, considering that it's been, 50 years since Voyager and those things were sent out there. It took a while to get some stuff up there where we were monitoring, what is the sun doing?
Early warning system.
It's that, it's all kinds of stuff.
There's
a lot of unknowns with the sun. We look at it every day, but unfortunately there's, even now there's still a lot of unknowns on how exactly it works, its cycles, all that sort of stuff.
When I've been out in networking events in the past, I've talked about these kinds of things, and I'll be real blunt, I don't care. I just literally don't care anymore. Of course, not that I ever really cared in my life for anything else. But, you know, I would talk to people about EMPs. I would talk about CMEs. I'd talk about solar flares. And you get this blank look like, these don't exist. And I said, yeah, they do. Here, I'll say it in such a way that might make sense. It's a burp. If somebody burps in your face, it's pretty powerful. It could be really ugly. It may be nothing. You know, it's like passing gas. You know, we can say, you know, passing gas, or you can simply use the word fart, you know. So sometimes they're silent and deadly. Sometimes they're loud and wet. And, you know, sometimes they're just nasty. And depending upon the intensity, the throw can be a long ways. And it, people begin to go, oh, it really does that? Yeah, it really does that. It's a living thing.
Yeah, there's... it's one of these things that they don't have a significant impact on most people on Earth's life. So and haven't ever. So
although we're going to talk about the Starlink event that took place a couple of years ago, I'll talk about that.
Well, so you know, to put it in a little bit, you know, more perspective, the Northern Lights, the Aurora Borealis, and all of that is a consequence of solar radiation. And it's the magnetosphere dealing with it. And it's just, it's a unique situation with how the magnetosphere comes together and where the energy is skipping off or is being absorbed. And you get to see magical lights.
Yes. And for anyone who has not seen that, especially those of you who are retired, I have seen some amazing Aurora Borealis when I lived in Wisconsin. And we had a very unique event back in the late 70s, and it was beautiful, absolutely beautiful. And, well, of course, I recall, Iceland, and, you know, there's a lot of places that are just beautiful.
Well, I recall last year, it was in the news, I think it was last year, it was in the news that someplace in Ukraine, the something to do with the solar flares or energy and magnetosphere and everything, the Aurora Borealis went all the way down into Ukraine.
Oh, that's amazing.
Which, you know, a lot of people, they're sitting around doing nothing because it's a war zone. So the lots of pictures and stuff came out about it. It was pretty cool.
Well, fortunately, it didn't go all the way down to the Middle East or down into other continents where they would then have interpreted it as a sign from God. So sorry, it is what it is.
Yeah, so solar flares are interesting. The larger solar flares, like we mentioned, are coronal mass ejections. And again, this is one of these things that it's becoming knowledge about how the sun works and everything. It's becoming better, but it's still, why does the sun do this? You know, is it predictable? Absolutely not. But you know, these things are a long ways away. So we have, you know, a few hours, maybe as much as a day, depending on circumstances to, catch them and figure out if they're going to be close, if we need to worry about it or not.
Now there is a little bit of a cycle. They've kind of identified whoever they are, the people in the dictionary under the word they. you look there; they're just little blank faces, and you know, you can't make them out. They're little, you know, who's. The point though is in 2025 is supposed to be the peak of solar activity, and that. They're expecting an uptick coming up pretty substantially. So for whatever it's worth, I don't think it's going to be like the Carrington event from 1859, but who knows?
So that would be the most relevant event in recorded modern human history. The Carrington event was really only special because this is slightly prior to the Civil War. And we started to run electrical wires for the purposes of telecommunications all over the globe, but in particular, all over the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in this case, it was telegraph communications. And that of course, accompanied what phenomenon that was going on at the time? The railroad.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. The railroad, telegraph.
Railroad and telegraph go together.
Yep.
And
bank robbers, Jesse James.
Something I don't think people realize is that one wouldn't go without the other because of the infrastructure investment requirements.
Another thing we'll talk about one day.
So, 1859, you have this, they call it the Carrington event, and a CME of, I can't remember the specifics on what, how powerful it was or whatever, it's not really valuable for this conversation, but... a very powerful solar flare hit Earth directly, and that energy overwhelmed the Earth's natural defenses, and some of that energy came into our space. It wasn't powerful enough to do any damage to people, which, you know, do remember that, you know, the human cardiovascular and central nervous system are nothing but a bunch of electrical impulses. So when it is theorized that a powerful enough CME could actually like kill people. It would just short circuit and overwhelm your system and cause heart attacks and all kinds of things. But and obviously with the advent of electronic pacemakers and all kinds of implants, potentially even a scarier situation. But there's no recorded evidence of that happening, at least in human history. So the Carrington event,
or recorded history.
Yes, that yes. But the thing is, the energy has to go somewhere, and when you have a bunch of for the first time ever, copper wires running from all over the country, we had a bad situation of the electricity overwhelmed the designed infrastructure for the telegraph system, and it caught telephone poles on fire, and caught building switching stations and buildings on fire. And
there were lots of reports of telegraph operators getting
electrocuted. And
yeah,
all that. Yeah,
yeah. It was an issue.
Yeah, because the energy is going to go path of least resistance, and a big old copper wire floating up in the air, it will capture, it'll capture that energy. So
for AOC and friends of hers and the Karens in the world, we actually have had people who are astronomers. There wasn't a gap between Galileo and SpaceX. We actually had people that were, looking up in the sky. One of those is a fellow by the name of Richard Carrington, and that's what the Carrington event of 1895, specifically in September, is called. And but I want to go back to something that you said about I thought was interesting, something I haven't thought about in a long, long time. You know, if you have a solar flare that is so massively powerful, right? I mean, it's really, really powerful.
Sure.
It would not destroy buildings, would it?
Okay, so this is where we venture off into speculation land, but there are a few people. I think one of them is. Let me take a look here.
While you're recalling that, I want to give you a setup. We have a lot of, I would say, societies from years ago, hundreds of thousands. You know, we have been around some form of Homo sapien, and Neanderthal has been walking around this earth for a long, long time. We're not going to do any speculation, but I've always wondered, is it possible that entire societies nearly evaporated and went away because they were short-circuited out?
It's something that's definitely possible. The end of the Younger Dryas, there's a lot of very interesting theories people speculate as to what caused this. Basically, it's a time period where it's 12,900, almost 13,000 years ago, where, the North American polar ice cap came all the way down to like central southern Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
The
development of the Wisconsin Dells is all because of that.
Absolutely.
Beautiful area.
And most of this country is shaped by this event. The highlights that people find so interesting is, the oceans were 300 feet lower than they are today, around 100 meters. So ideas of land masses and their size and scope and everything were significantly different back then. There is evidence of human activity back at this time point. We don't know what we don't know is really what it boils down to. But we do know that humans lived through this event. And what's interesting is basically the polar ice caps melt down. There's a theory that this is caused by some type of extraterrestrial impact of some sort that hits one of the ice caps, melts part of it down,
mm-hmm.
and then you have basically 1,000 years where it's basically 1,000 years of hell on Earth, where the living conditions go from stable but cold, generally speaking, to within a couple of years, 3 degrees warmer. Persistent yearly tidal rising to the point that we eventually get to where we're at today, pretty much about 300 feet of total ocean rise, Well, I can tell you, you know, you start to do the thinking on what does the Earth look like after that kind of an event, and you start to realize that the people freaking out about climate change are Chicken Little by comparison to an event that we actually live through.
Yeah.
And, you know, this event, if you just consider the way humans live today, we live like 99% of the population lives on one of these floodplains or a coastline that would be inundated by this kind of rise in sea level and water levels. So you start to realize that any infrastructure, even if we had the most advanced civilization, you know, we were traveling to outer space, it doesn't matter. The water is going to come anyway. It would wipe everything out. There would be zero evidence of anything. And then we all know, you know, if you live on the coast anywhere, bless you, as you replace all of your light fixtures every couple of years, you repaint everything every couple of years, the erosion from the salt and everything destroys everything that is metal and whatever. Now imagine 100, 200, 300, 500. Now imagine 10,000 years. There's nothing left.
No.
And
except for oftentimes your insanely hard rock structures.
Even that wears away.
And, yeah, but marble and granite, if it's buried under sufficient silt, yada, yada, yada. You know, yes. We know that. It has to be some protective odd anomaly that, you know, oh, look, clay pot from 400,000 BC.
So this is an event that there's a lot of speculation about. You know, there's a lot of, it's gotten more popular as people theorize the human implication of this. It's not just a theoretical point in time, like, you know, the KT impact where it's like, oh, it killed the dinosaurs. This is interesting.
You know, it's funny. I'm just going to say to you, let me jump in. I was just going to say to everybody, I want you to talk about that. And because, you know, we have this standard protocol of belief that you had blunt force trauma for all practical purposes that changed the course of the Earth, the dinosaurs and Cro-Magnon man. Everybody is always the same thing. You know, wow, it's a big impact that is by itself did all the change. Here's the problem I have with that. And I totally agree that was huge on a scale of 1 to 10. That was a 999,000.1. But here's the thing. You know, you have a lot of these Indians from years ago that were cave dwellers. We have, you know, so many archaeologists who want to say that we came from tadpoles and we were cave dwellers. And, you know, all of our ancestors were named Zog, Grog, and Rog. And they were just, you know, dragging their women by hair and beating each other with sticks. You have that place that you just gave the name of where, you know, we have entire societies where they dug into the mountains and went underground. Now, here's the point. If people are not that stupid years ago, they had some observational capabilities. Okay, Karen, I'm talking to you. If you have people that said, you know what, Uncle Joe got fried and dropped dead, and Larry was in the dugout, you know, making cheese, and he survived, wouldn't it make you go, maybe I need to have my home inside of a mountain? And so you start thinking about, why did these people from years ago start digging in? What would the cause be? The only thing I can think of is that something of such a magnitude happened. Maybe it was just a giant solar burp.
Well, yeah. So this is where I was leading to, is this event happened, but there's other pieces of evidence as people have researched it, and in particular done excavations and done correlations with stuff all over the earth, is you get a couple items that are very interesting. There's an item, you can Google it, it's called the Black Mat Layer. You can go anywhere on earth, you dig down deep enough, and as long as it hasn't been scraped away by modern construction, you will find it. And
that's worldwide.
Yes, that's, yeah, worldwide. And this black mat layer is simply just charcoal. Well, a lot of stuff has to burn to put a visible layer of debris all over the entire earth. And it's a consequence of, at different points in time in this thousand-year period, it wasn't just, you know, the ocean level rising, and it wasn't just all of these, you know, the meteor impact potentially, and all these things. It also was something like 20 or 30% of the landmass of all of Earth caught on fire. And that sounds crazy, because we know you can start to do some calculations on what that would look like. The biomass of Earth just igniting on fire to that degree in a short enough time period to be create a visible layer that doesn't erode away or whatever, that's insanity. And there's some interesting theories about this. I can't remember exactly the man's name, but he has done a lot of very interesting research, and I think I actually have his book. But one of the things he talks about is it very well could be the consequence of a series of solar storms that the Earth just got abused by. And this is like the extreme end of the CMEs, you know, with a very powerful coronal mass ejection. It could fry all kinds of technology and anything that isn't very well grounded or sitting in a
bunker.
That wouldn't even help in some cases.
Yeah, but, no, I know, I do. But throwing it out.
But it's not about it's having effectively it's a Faraday cage. You're protecting it from electromagnetic interference.
And a Faraday cage is not necessarily a bad thing for everybody to carry every once in a while with them.
So the issue ends up being, what happens when that energy has nowhere to go? During the Carrington event, you know, the only reason people really noticed it was because, oh, look, the telegraph lines are catching on fire and stuff like that. If it wasn't for that, nobody would have really noticed anything other than the Aurora Borealis was really huge. I think that during the Carrington event, the Aurora Borealis was visible from almost all of North America for like 2 days. So that was, people viewed that as a sign from God, of course. And, you know, there were all these religious perspectives on these things. But anyway, so you start to look at, you know, orders of magnitude bigger than even this. And what does that look like? And the reality is the magnetosphere has to disperse of that energy somehow. And the extremely scary conclusion that people have come to is it would basically create global lightning storms until that energy is dissipated.
Well, you know,
which would light everything on fire.
Right, and you go back.
Like, imagine the worst. See, we're used to lightning storms coming with rain. So, hey, at least as it catches stuff on fire, it's dousing it with, ideally, to prevent fires from spreading too much. But lightning storms do cause a majority of wildfires, and they always have. But now imagine where it's uncontrollable, meaning it's you can't wait it out. Like, it'll last potentially weeks or months.
And I'm going to touch on 37.
To go to what you were just talking about a few minutes ago, that's why you would go underground or get into a place that can't catch on fire.
No, I totally agree with that. And I'm going to touch 37 rails on this. If you go back and look at the Bible, and you look at, you know, fire and brimstone and Revelation and the book of Revelations and all that. And, you know, I sometimes I wish people would stop taking things literally, at the same time begin taking things literally. Oh, well, it's just somebody's story. Well, okay, you know, people are going to hate this, but, you know, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and we talk about the very end, the fire and brimstone and all the, you know, just, I can go for hours on this stuff. Well, maybe there weren't a whole lot of people left over. And, you know, the story of, you know, there were maybe very few places left that were inhabitable. And then, that turns out to be Eden.
Well, you can go to, you know, everybody knows the story of Sodom and Gomorrah. I mean, unless you're illiterate. And, you know, so this is one of the more famous stories in the Old Testament, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I can't remember if it's Sodom or Gomorrah, but like those places have you can go to, and I've seen some like fantastic video where it literally looks like the place was melted. You can see the black mat. You can see what looks like a tremendous firestorm just destroyed this whole area. So at least part of it, right, in the general area of where these they say these places were supposed to be. So it's very interesting because, you know, this is a good example of where you take a story of a thing that actually may have probably happened based on the evidence, and then you look at, well, maybe it was a natural event that for one reason or another, it may have happened in the event that we're talking about, if that is how it transpired, or it could have been some weird isolated event that, you know, was natural, but then it was turned into a story of consequences, right?
Right.
Which is what a lot of religion is. It's a story of, if you do this, then this happens.
What was it? Is it the game of telegram where you whisper to one thing that you go around the circle and then
telephone?
Yeah. Telephone. Thank you. Well, I want to go back to my birthday, July 14th, back in 2000. That was an event known as the Bastille Day event. It was an X, as in the former company called Twitter. It was an X-class solar flare. And knocked out satellite communication and a lot of it. Now, if we go to February 22nd, just a few years ago, February of 2022, just a few years ago, on January 29th, the sun burped an M1 flare, a coronal mass ejection, and took out a whole bunch of, I think it was almost 40 Starlink satellites. Bang, done. The company lost, I think, about $300 million as a result of that. And it was a pretty good, 49, I've got it here, 49 satellites got chunked away and went bye-bye. And, you know, these things are real.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it definitely happens. And that's, I would say it's more of a poor design problem, because you send stuff into space and that's a huge risk factor with electronics in space is managing electrical surges and things like this, because you don't have the protective barrier of the Earth anymore. You're completely out in raw, real space, and you know, whatever's coming your way there, you have to be prepared for it. So that's one thing that is not talked about, because most people just don't understand electrical engineering, but that is a huge part of the reason satellites are expensive.
So one of the things we do here at Truesdale Wealth is we are wealth advisors and managers, and I take a great deal of fondness, it's not a good way of wording it, but a pleasure in the fact that we do a lot of forecasting and thinking not outside of the box, but rejecting the box even exists, which, if you're listening to this, you should be coming to that conclusion. So, little things, power grids. We have critical infrastructure all over the place that are dependent upon technology. You know, you used to go to, let's just say, Staples and various other, you know, office supply stores. And when you were at the checkout, they would have a big, giant display of maps. Your county map, your city maps, your national maps, 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 maps. Nobody buys maps anymore.
No.
And if you have no ability for Karen and Ken to get GPS and maps on their phone, they're lost, completely lost. But, you know, the economic implications, but also the public safety, you know, think of all the 911 towers. People don't have landlines and zip zap. We know of a story, for example, in a county in our area, where a big chunk of the county had a tower go down during a storm, and no 911 service at all. So there's a lot of things from an investment standpoint where you've got to make things a little bit more resilient, early warning systems. So there's some money to be made there if you focus on that.
There, honestly, to prepare for something like this, which is inevitable.
Yeah, I think that's the key word. It is inevitable.
It is an inevitability that we will have a large solar flare hit Earth. Hopefully it hits an area that's unpopulated for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
But it is something that we will have to deal with at some point. Probably in my lifetime. But if not, then the next. The problem is the infrastructure as designed on Earth with regard to telecommunications and electricity in particular, the two things that make modern civilization, you know, make it modern, are extremely vulnerable to an event like this. They're not they have been designed and deployed in an era where people did not consider this a possibility. It's becoming more of a thing that people consider, but there's no way to test it. How do you test, you know, a huge surge in voltage on a system that's not supposed to do it? I mean, it's one of these things. It's hard to wrap your head around the difficulty of the problem, but it's possible to mitigate. It's definitely a possible thing.
You have to have backup systems that revert to what I would call the mean. You got to go back to a really basic level.
Well, no, with this, you're dealing with managing a surge in voltage, and you need to design your infrastructure to mitigate this extra voltage, before it gets to other things. And it's a huge problem that could be dealt with. Unfortunately, it's too expensive. I mean,
we would have to
engineer and have a plan to re-engineer at least $1 trillion worth of U.S. infrastructure. And the problem with that is that, you know, in the U.S. in particular, over the past 30 to 40 years, we have privatized utilities.
Right.
And so there's no investment going into utilities, not even for basic expansion and maintenance, let alone preventing large-scale catastrophes, because you can look at the balance sheets, you can look at the spending of these companies. There's a reason utilities are a great investment, because they pay out great dividends, and they pay out those dividends at the cost of investment in further infrastructure, upgrades, protection, and enhancement. And a good example of what that looks like, worst case scenario, is the wildfires in California over the past 10 years.
Same thing with Hawaii.
Event. What about Hawaii?
I thought in Malibu, not Malibu, in Maui, I thought the fires there, they determined they were electrical in nature. That's
news to me. I don't know. I just know the ones in California.
We'll stick with California.
100-year-old pieces of equipment failed.
Yeah.
Electrical lines drop on overgrown forests.
And I think what you said is important to understand. Literally 100-year-old pieces of equipment.
Yeah. Yeah. In one case, I won't go into the details, but basically there's a certain type of let's call it a hinge that your electrical lines sit on to prevent interference and shorting, and literally they figured out that this thing is 100 years old, and it eventually just rubbed through and broke. I mean, it's an old piece of metal that eventually just wore out. So anyway, and that caused, I think, the most damaging by dollar amount anyway, a wildfire in U.S. history. Would it kill like 200 people or something like that?
Yeah, it was.
And caused like 10 plus billion in damage. It was all because...
And it killed people who were of means and substance, and so that meant the value of the damage became even greater in the eyes of the legislatures.
Yeah, and that was all because basically the utility company did not, you know, properly maintenance their equipment. But also, they didn't invest in upgrading things, and you know, they're supposed to check these things, but you know, whatever. So it's just it's an issue that we're at a point where, you know, people are gonna if we get a mild solar flare that like takes, you know, I don't know, a section of the West Coast out, because they're the unlucky ones that gets to see it, and you know, you've got, I don't know, maybe 40, 50 million people without power for 2 or 3 weeks. One, that'll be a national disaster of like beyond epic proportions. You know, it'd be an absolute nightmare. But, you know, then once that's over and things are back to normal and whatever, you'll have people, you know, up in arms complaining that, oh, the government shouldn't be spending all this money on infrastructure. It's like, I agree, but who's going to pay for it?
Well, but money needs to be spent on education. Don't ever forget.
Of course. But you get my point, right? It's just, it's a quandary of, you know, you have industries that are really, you know, public utilities, they're protected by a lot of very interesting legislation, but at the same time, they are run like, you know, for-profit entities that really probably shouldn't. They should be running on, at least as far as like for-profit public companies.
Yeah.
Instead, that money should be banked up and used for further infrastructure expansion and protection and enhancement in an environment, especially where the government is promoting and everybody's promoting electric cars. But yet we don't even have the grid capacity to let a fraction of the population charge them. You know, one of the things people forget about is these past couple of years, electricity prices have gone up tremendously across the entire country. One of those reasons is electric cars.
Electric cars.
Electric cars are driving up electricity prices everywhere because there is not extra capacity in the systems.
So when you see that Tesla going down the road and you can look at that person and say, thank you very much for the increased electric bill. Well, a quick little shift here because I don't want to forget about it. I've been reading a lot about, and I'm not a fanboy, let me make it real clear, a lot of your Silicon Valley billionaires and others of like means are building a series of survival bunkers. There are places, and it's not just a place. They're not all going to one place, but there's a couple of big places.
New Zealand is where a lot of them are going.
A lot of them going to New Zealand. There's a lot.
A check can buy you citizenship and asset protection.
Yep. But also there's in Arizona and New Mexico. There's different places. Even in California, they're doing some places. I read an interesting thing, though, that one of the things that they were all very, very focused on was the ability to communicate with each other, even though they have their separate bunkers and things like that. And so there are lines, communications buried way down deep that go in. And it was just something that I read and I thought, okay, that'll relate to what we're talking about here today. Also, if you happen to do any of the Googling machine search, you'll find that Zuckerberg in Hawaii, whatever island he's on, has built a really big bunker with all the caveats. And I think this is, it's worth looking at. One more thing, but all of this, again, a little burp of a Carrington event. Think of the insurance industry impact.
It's
fires
a
and
it's a wipeout. If you had a Carrington event today, which, this is something that I won't go into, but, there's a new, I'd have to dig through my notes to find it exactly, the specifics, but, a couple months ago, a Japanese guy published some research, and one of the things he figured out was they had a, he found a proxy for solar flares, and the proxy is in old tree ring data.
Oh,
and
okay.
There's a lot of specifics about this. I won't get into it. It's very interesting.
Tree ring. Now there's another topic we need to talk about. I'm going to add to the list tree ring analysis.
Okay. So he figured out a new method to analyze the tree ring data, and it was very interesting. Basically, old trees capture stuff. The environment around them get captured in the old growth. And he figured out how to do something and how to analyze and detect this proxy. And what he was able to see is, okay, so among these multi-thousand-year-old trees that we have for analysis, we've got a couple periods where there were massive solar events that are undocumented because most of them happened before we have records. And one of these is tied in with several events in human history that were interesting. It's not worth getting into right now. But the big takeaway I remember is that, one, there was one around like 900, year 900 or so.
Okay.
That is effectively not in any of the history books, and they don't know why. Because it was enough to mark in the tree ring data, which means it would have been a significant event. But there's no human written history about anything that happened then. Of any substance. So that's very curious. But then the other thing is the Carrington event was not powerful enough to register this proxy.
Oh, really?
So the events that we're talking about are traumatic by comparison. So anyway, to go to your point about insurance and all of that, a Carrington event would be like a Carrington event's effect on the insurance industry and stuff like that would be akin to the effect of the Peshtigo and Chicago fires on the Midwest insurance industry.
Another topic we should talk about.
It would be a total wipeout. I mean, we have a direct relative. He lost everything.
Yeah.
Because all the insurance companies went bankrupt, and all of his property investment in Chicago and throughout Illinois and Michigan, his investments were wiped out. And there's, having insurance is cool if the insurance company can pay out. Back then, there was no state or other guarantees. So when the insurance company went out of business, that was that.
We should talk about our relative from Wisconsin, a direct descendant.
That's what I'm referring to.
Who is really responsible for Wisconsin being the cheese state.
Yes.
Nobody knows that.
He became a state senator, and one of his primary initiatives was getting the state to promote Wisconsin cheese as the best in the country.
Yep.
And why did he do this? Because he owned one of the largest dairy farms in the state. Why not use the government to promote your own product?
We could also talk about Truesdell Furs and the Vanderbilts and all of that. We could go through all our family history.
But that's interesting because, you know, we actually have a family crossover there where, you know, he was a very wealthy man and he was completely wiped out because of the Chicago and Peshtigo fires, which most people don't realize they're the same thing, but they are.
Yeah. It wasn't a cow.
No, it was actually, according to the current kind of thinking, obviously maybe not mainstream, but like if you are not afraid of touching a rail or two, the current thinking on that is that it is likely not solar induced,
no,
but a comet trail because of where it happened.
Right.
It looks like if you had a bunch of debris from a comet, mm-hmm, come through, it would have kind of smacked in this general area. And they actually think they know roughly what it was. But anyway, it's very interesting. But yes, the effect on insurance and government reinsurance and all that stuff, even a baby Carrington would be traumatic because everything's so expensive. I mean, a big electrical infrastructure in particular is extremely expensive. And I remember reading about this type of stuff years ago, and one of the biggest concerns by people, of course, you know, they're conspiracy loons and they're totally crazy, is that the ability to produce large electrical transformers in particular, extremely large electrical equipment, mainly transformers, the production capacity was very limited, mm-hmm, because we just don't, there, you know, you have a big transformer at a big nuclear power station, right? You have a few of those. Well, you know, you need them in a couple of years. They cost a couple million dollars a piece. They're huge pieces of equipment that are, you know, the size of houses, right? That infrastructure, we can't make it fast enough if you had a mass failure of these things. Well, that's actually been tested in the past couple of years. And that concern has been proven out. Do you know what I'm referring to?
What do you refer to?
Ukraine.
Oh, okay.
The Russians, because they are sadistic and incompetent, their primary target of their, I think now, 2,500 missiles that they've fired into Ukraine, the primary target has been infrastructure, high-rises, and civilian neighborhoods. So one of the primary things they were doing, especially the summer last, not this past winter, the winter before last, was they were having a lot of people that I know and communicate with called it just impotent rage, just flinging missiles at mainly energy infrastructure, trying to basically make living in the country more painful. And of course, that did nothing but actually increase the resolve. You can look at studies of post-World War II studies on strategic bombing and why strategic bombing was preferred going forward, because mass bombing did nothing for your cause. If anything, especially in Europe, it was one of the big psychological takeaways, is bombing civilian areas to just prove a point, firebombing, you know, cities like we did in Japan and in all over Germany, they
oftentimes hardens people's resolve.
Not oftentimes, like 100% of the time. Like
that's true.
Like it doesn't. It does not help your cause. Where strategic bombing does. Well, anyway, the Russians learned the same thing in Ukraine. Making people cold in the middle of winter, when they're under attack, turns out it does not actually make them like you. It makes them hate you more.
Yeah, it's like the movie. I forgot what the movie is. Brad Pitt is talking about you kill one terrorist, and so now you created two more. What's the name of the movie? Do you remember?
I don't know the name of the movie, but just look up Terrorist Math.
Yeah, Terrorist Math.
It's a speech by, I believe it's a... It's a movie called War Machine, I think.
It's just a great it's a great little thing.
I'm trying to recall who he was playing. Anyway, the character he was playing was an actual general, mm-hmm. and he gave this speech. And I've seen the real speech. It's the Brad Pitt one's better, but the speech is real, and it was the United States trying to cope with the reality of okay, we've got control over the situation, but. Basically, these shitheads keep popping up. Like, how do we? What do
Whack-a-mole.
We? What do we do? This yeah. is like this is just won't end. And of course, you know that is a it is a real psychological phenomenon. Of course, the thing that it doesn't talk about that I've learned a lot since is it does not include things that we learned later with relation to the rat lines going from Africa into Iraq in particular. That were funded and logistics were provided by Iran. It doesn't talk about the support of various things with regard to the rat lines and other activities. That, like for example, when we went into Afghanistan, one of the things the Afghan war wasn't a big deal, right? In the grand scheme of things, not a lot of casualties. Anybody that was there, you know, the things that killed people were things that they weren't prepared for. It was IEDs. It was stupid stuff. It wasn't this like, you know, this glorious, you know, perspective of war that everybody likes to prepare for. Like you see in Ukraine. I mean, that's a real war, right?
Yep.
Where this was like policing, like with sideways policing. It was just craziness. But there was a period where there was real warfare. And the thing is, the same phenomenon was seen in Iraq, but it was mainly dealt with in Afghanistan because it happened 18 months to 2 years earlier, is the, you know, our guys went into different areas and they would meet resistance of people that actually had their stuff together. They understood, you know, interlocking fields of fire, and they understood how to set up, you know, defensive positions or quality ambush positions. And the thing they figured out is a lot of these guys, they weren't Afghanis, at least not all of them. And this is the thing they realized in the first, like, we were in Iraq maybe 3 to 4 months, and then quote-unquote infiltration of more professional terrorist groups started to come in. And it was the same thing they noticed there. Oh, we've got guys that actually have their stuff together. Again, they understood how to properly defend a building. They understood, one of the big ones is just communication under stress, right? These guys were dealing with just people that weren't super serious and were kind of idiots at the end of the day. Dangerous, but idiots. And then you go up against a group of people where it's like, oh, they're in these three buildings and they have interlocking fields of fire and we can't get near them without like armored vehicles and potentially taking a lot more damage, right?
Mm-hmm.
These guys were not Iraqis. These guys were not Afghanis. They were Chechens. Where did they come from?
Oh, I have no idea.
Where's Chechnya?
A little ways away.
Russia.
Yeah.
So this is the
right up the street.
This is the thing that people don't realize is Russia has been playing the other side of this game forever. Russia famously did not. Now this is conspiracy land, but I bet you somebody inside the CIA or State Department if they heard this, would probably nod, going, "Yeah, you know more. You lead on." The Russia famously let the coalition go into Iraq, right? Despite Iraq being a great client state of Russia forever. Well, it was because Russia was in the middle of the Chechen War. It was really convenient for them, wasn't it? We go into Iraq. oh, we ignite the great jihad on America, right? Then what do? They clean up Chechnya, and then as far as my guess goes, again, I have no evidence for this, but my theory now is that they didn't say no or stand in between or cause problems. They just let us do what we did because it was a way to get their problem. They encouraged their problem to go fight us.
Absolutely. No, one of these days I'll talk about, we'll do a story on this. I really want to talk about the Ethiopian and Somali wars from years ago and how I wrote a paper that went to the Ford administration, and Dr. Bibby at the University of Wisconsin sent it up. And I, you know, there are sometimes you need to sit back and let everybody just kill themselves. I mean, I remember years ago, I was with a corporal, Wiley Howell, at the Tampa Police Department. And it was he and I, and we were the only two officers assigned to a biker brawl on the Tango Lounge, the old Tango Lounge on the Courtney Campbell Causeway. We just sat back and let them beat the hell out of each other. And Wiley said, in his funny voice, he had a, whenever he got nervous, he'd get shotgun, Paulie. We're gonna shoot their asses if they come near us. And we just sat back and let them beat the hell out of each other. And finally, he wound up kicking one of their motorcycles and had a small bum, 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 bum. And they got their attention. And he basically said, get the hell out of here. We're going to shoot you. But we're not going to get in fights. Yeah. We're not going to fight them.
Or at least when you do, it's, you know, it's cleanup or it's
oh, yeah.
You're guaranteed to win, right?
Yeah.
And this is a case of, you know, we're talking about this is with regard to Russia, you know, this is the Soviet Union's active measures and alternative warfare is still ongoing, and this is part of it, you know. And anyways, so in the grand scheme of things, we go back to power and all this sort of stuff. They blew up a lot of these transformers at these large geothermal and nuclear power plants in Ukraine, substations, switching stations, whatever. And that's one of the big aid things that Europe has been helping them with. Well, they've been pulling them out of their stockpiles because Europe has strategic stockpiles of these things. I don't know that we do. I would hope we do. So point is that this is one of the concerns, was that if Russia was able to continue to destroy these things at a pace that they were a couple years ago now, or 18 months ago, that Ukraine could be in a very dangerous place with a limited power grid. Well, they figured out ways to mitigate this and deal with this, and air defense systems have helped and all this stuff, but it didn't solve the problem of the manufacturing of these things. So going back to solar flares, you know, you get an area the size of Texas that has a lot of damage from solar on your just your energy grid, not counting anything else. I mean, you have years to recover from such a thing just because of the time for production at our current production capacity. Of course, you know, this is one of those things, making a prediction based on that sort of thing, it's variable, right?
No, there's no predictions here.
And yeah. Do different things, but
this is just forecasting and spitting and sending, you know, what if, what if, what if. And that needs to be done.
But regardless, it is a serious thing that should be planned for.
Yeah, right? I mean, look.
It's something that it's not a risk that is aliens. It's not, it's also, you know what I mean? It's not like we're preparing for something that's absurd. It's more akin to preparing for a tsunami or, you know, a 1 in 100 years, like, earthquake. It's one of those things. It's like, it's outside of the realm of most people's thinking, but if you're in public policy and you're thinking about these things on a broader scale, it is worth considering these things because it is a black swan event that's not really even a black swan because you know what it is.
Yeah, and
it's a preventable disaster, or at least it's something that you can prepare for and mitigate some of the worst aspects of the disaster.
And the thing that I've talked about extensively, and if you want to see a movie that fantasizes about this, would be Ocean's 11 or 12 or 13, whatever it yeah. is. I mean, I've said this for years. I'm smart enough. I know you are. We can create an EMP. We can screw up a pretty big area pretty easy. There's lots of us all around the world. And so, you know, looking at electronic infrastructure, technology infrastructure from a multifaceted view, from man-made devices to accidents to nefarious transmissions, you know, like somebody somehow or another got some code into some Iranian places and made things kind of melt down. It's all sort of related.
Yeah.
And yes, the sun also sometimes passes gas. We're going to wrap up. I'm going to ask you to do me a favor, if you don't mind. For those of you who are clients of Truesdell Wealth, I'm going to ask Paul to put together a page on the Learning Hive and your access. I'm going to put a thing called the Red Book. And I'm going to steal this from somebody else that I know. And I'm going to add all future topics and just kind of add it to Red Book along with a couple other things.
Sure.
I'm going to add in, I want to talk about three-ring binders. I'm going to ask, for those of you who are still listening, I'm going to ask you to contact us in just a minute. I'll give you a way how to do this. But let's talk about three-ring binders. I really would like to talk about not just Russia, but also Chinese mentality, how screwed up they are. They're just... The Western world cannot deal with these people, no matter what Jamie Dimon and BlackRock.
We can deal with them, but you have to be honest.
We have to be honest about it, right?
Their different set of morals and the way they do things,
right?
And if you try to apply our society's standards to them, we'll get taken advantage of. That is really the reality.
I'm reminded of the video of the guy who is being stabbed to death in New York City, and his wife. He's not fighting back, and he's saying, "What are you doing? What are you doing? Please don't do this!" And he's stabbed to death, and his Karen, you know, Ken dies, and Karen is like, "Oh my goodness! Oh my goodness! You know, I don't want a woman around me like that. I want someone who's going to take your shoe off, take a heel, and hit the guy, do something." But anyway, I get sideways on that. I really like to follow up more on the younger Dryas. I like to really get into that in detail. The Pest You Go Fire, and so here's the request. We put this up on a larger podcast platforms, just on Apple and other places. So would you do me a favor? Leave a review. I've never asked anyone to do that. But if you're listening to us, do a review. We'd like a positive review. And tell your friends, family, friends, neighbors, relatives, coworkers on Facebook, on LinkedIn, all the different things that are out there, Telegram and Tiki-Taki and whatever. And just pick it up in conversation. Say, hey, listen to these guys. Just do a one-to-one conversation, and I'd appreciate it. I'm going to find a couple things. I'm going to find the Brad Pitt item. I'm going to drop that here in just a minute. I'm going to put a thing with Bill Murray and his movie Meatballs, his rant. And I'll find Chris Farley and living in a van down by the river to kind of add a little flavor at the very end of some of the things that we talked about. Son, what do you think? Are we just about ready to get out of here?
Yeah, I think it's a good introduction to this topic, and it kind of shows you how multifaceted everything can be. There's obviously a lot of other hinging topics that we can go into in the future, but also, you know, if you're interested in this yourself, just dig into it and start looking around. There's a lot of stuff to read about. And if you're looking for any specific, if you're actually interested and you want some additional reading material or whatever, just give us a shoot and I can always send over some stuff. It is a never ending well of actually pretty interesting information.
So with that, Tippecanoe, Tyler too, you kind of know a little bit of what we do and how we think a little bit different. This is sponsored by Truesdell Wealth, the home of fixed cost investing. We don't just think outside the box. We rejected the box even exists in the first place. That's how we begin. So I'm Paul the Elder.
And I'm Paul the Younger.
And we're out of here. Tippecanoe, out of here.
This episode of the Paul Truesdell Podcast, Two Pauls in a Pod, was sponsored by Truesdell Wealth, a registered investment advisor and home to fixed cost investing. For more information, visit truesdellwealth.com. That's truesdellwealth.com. You can also call or text 212-433-2525. That's 212-433-2525. Your kind words to family, friends, neighbors, relatives, and coworkers, along with a review on Apple Podcasts or any other podcast player, is appreciated. And now, a clip from War Machine and Brad Pitt's speech, followed then by Bill Murray's motivational speech in the movie Meatballs, and lastly, Chris Farley's Living in a Van Down by the River skit on Saturday Night Live.
Let's say you have 10 insurgents. Huh? Now let's say you kill two of them. Now, how many insurgents do you have left? Well, you'd say 8, of course. 8, right? Yeah. Right? Yeah. Wrong. In this scenario, 10 minus 2 equals 20. Let's say the two insurgents you just killed each had 6 friends or brothers or some such who are hovering on the brink of joining the insurgency. They're thinking about this insurgency thing. Looks interesting, but, you know, for one reason or other, not for me. But, so, then you go and kill their friend. Now, you just made up their minds for them. Those hovering friends are now full, paid-up members of the enemy. Yeah. And so, in the math of counterinsurgency, 10 minus 2 equals 20.
Come on, you can do it!
Losing doesn't mean it's all over.
Cut the crap, Morty. I mean, the Mohawks have beaten us the last 12 years. They're going to beat us again.
That's just the attitude we don't need, Phil. Sure, Mohawk has beaten us 12 years in a row. Sure, they're terrific athletes. They've got the best equipment that money can buy. Hell, every team they're sending over here has their own personal masseuse. Not masseur, masseuse. But it doesn't matter. Do you know that every Mohawk competitor has an electrocardiogram, blood and urine tests every 48 hours to see if there's any change in his physical condition? Do you know that they use the most sophisticated training methods from the Soviet Union, East and West Germany, and the newest Olympic power, Trinidad Tobago? But it doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. I tell you, it just doesn't matter. 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 Even if we win, ha! Even if we win, even if we play so far over our heads that our noses bleed for a week to 10 days, even if God in heaven above comes down and points his hand at our side of the field, even if every man, woman, and child held hands together and prayed for us to win, it just wouldn't matter, because all the really good-looking girls would still go out with the guys from Mohawk because they got all the money. It just doesn't matter if we win or we lose. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter.
Brian, Stacy, your mother Ellen and I are so glad you decided to join us for this family communication session.
So what's up? You guys getting divorced or something?
No, we just wanted the family to talk as a group.
Okay, well, let's get it started then.
All right, well, Stacy, Brian, your father, Ted, and I are a little bit concerned. Celia, the cleaning lady, was in the family room and she found a bag of pot.
She didn't smoke it, did she?
No, she didn't smoke it.
Now, we're not here to come down on you. I mean, that's not what we're about, okay?
We're just concerned that pot could lead to other things.
Crack, ice, boom, pow.
But we know you don't want to hear this from us.
Sure, I mean, we're your parents. Who wants to hear this stuff from their parents, huh?
But your father and I came up with a brilliant idea to give you kids some direction. A motivational speaker.
Yeah, one of those guys who speaks to big groups at high schools and churches.
You mean to come to the house?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
All right, later.
Thanks, anyway.
Hey, come on, you guys. This set me back a few bucks. Okay, his name is Matt Foley. Now, he's been down in the basement drinking coffee for about the last 4 hours, and he should be all ready to go. I'll call him up. Matt, we're ready for you. His speech is called Go For It. Now, he's used to big groups, so make him feel like there's a crowd here. Matt, come on up, buddy!
All right, how's everybody? Good, good, good. Now, as your father probably told you, my name is Matt Foley, and I am a motivational speaker. Now, let's get started by letting me give you a little bit of a scenario of what my life is all about. First off, I am 35 years old, I am divorced, and I live in a van down by the river. Now, you kids are probably saying to yourselves, hey, I'm going to go out and I'm going to get the world by the tail and wrap it around and pull it down and put it in my pocket. Well, I'm here to tell you that you're probably going to find out as you go out there that you're not going to amount to jack squat. You're going to end up eating a steady diet of government cheese and living in a van down by the river. Now, young man, what do you want to do with your life?
Actually, Matt, I kind of want to be a writer.
Well, la-di-frickin-duh! We got ourselves a writer here. Hey, Dad, I can't see real good. Is that Bill Shakespeare over there?
Huh? Well, actually, Matt, Ellen and I have encouraged Brian in his writing.
Dad, I wish you could just shut your big yapper!
Now, I wonder, Brian, from what I've heard, you're using your paper not for writing, but for rolling doobies. You're gonna be doing a lot of doobie rolling when you're living in a van down by the river. Young lady, what do you want to do with your life?
I want to live in a van down by the river.
Well, you'll have plenty of time to live in a van down by the river when you're living in a van down by the river. Now, you kids are probably asking yourselves, hey, Matt, how can we get back on the right track? Well, as I see it, there is only one solution. And that is for me to get my gear, move it on in here, because I'm going to bunk with you, buddy. We're going to be buddies. We're going to be pals. We're going to wrestle around. Old Matt's going to be your shadow. Here's you, here's Matt. There's you, there. Whoops-a-daisy. Whoops-a-daisy. By God. We're gonna have to clean that up later. Me and my buddies, my pals, my amigos. I'm gonna get my gear.
Wait, yeah, Matt, you don't have to go.
No,
Matt,
you don't
Matt.
Have to do that. We'll never smoke pot again.
Matt, thanks for all you've done.
I don't give a rat's behind because I'm moving in. I'm sick and tired of living in a van down by the river.
Is the back door locked?
Yes.
We love you, Dad.
I love you, too.